Hello everyone and welcome to episode 41 of the Inside Elland Road podcast brought to you by the Yorkshire Evening Post. I'm Phil Hay, the YEP's chief football writer. To my left, as ever most weeks, Joe Urquhart, Leeds United digital writer for the newspaper, the website really, although buy the paper if you will, every little helps. How are you, Joe? You well?
Good, thanks, good.
Good. Apologies for our no-show last week. It became a bit of a logistical nightmare in the end. I was tied up with a little bit of Josh Warrington stuff. You seem to be at about 7 or 8 games between the 23s and the Championship. So we were oddly silent last week. We don't intend to make a habit of that particularly. But back this week with plenty to talk about. We'll go over the Bristol City and the Reading games. We'll have a good chat about a fairly historic win down at Sheffield United. A look at the latest injury crisis, because yes, there is another one. You wouldn't have guessed it. And a little bit of chat about what's going on in the transfer market and with various players on the books at the moment. The Bristol City and Reading games, they felt like must-win games, not in the sense of the situation in the season just now, not in the sense of must-win games to achieve anything, but they're getting to the stage now, Leeds, where they've got a very strong foot in the fight for automatic promotion. And back-to-back games against clubs like that, bottom half of the table, neither of whom seem to be travelling particularly well this season, and neither of whom were in particularly great form. Two wins needed, two wins got. 4 days of very good work, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely, and sort of two games coming up in the next couple of weeks as well that are very, very similar, and two games that Leeds should be aiming to get 6 points from. I think it was not Leeds' best showing, but results at this stage of the season, when you're starting to sort of get towards a festive period, are more important than the all-out performance, aren't they? I think the Bristol City game, Leeds deserve winners. Don't know what Lee Johnson was on about. Let's just brush over that quickly. And then the Reading one, obviously, Bailey Peacock-Farrell's heroics. Big penalty save that could... You look back at big sort of different parts of the season, don't you? And I'm sure in May time we might look at that, and then even the Sheffield United result on Saturday, and look back and say there were big moments of the season one way or the other. So yeah, two good wins, 6 points in the bag, and those are games that you've got to be winning if you're going to be in the top six or even fighting for promotion in the top two.
We should say, with reference to the Bristol City game, that it definitely turned on the red card for Josh Brownhill, 10 minutes into the second half or so. Daft challenge on halfway. Could understand what he was doing. It was a loose pass from Barry Douglas. I think Brownhill was thinking that if he got a toe to it, Bristol City would have numbers in the counter-attack, which they would have done. But took out Kumar Roof, down to 10 men. And I always feel that if you give this Leeds team kind of license to attack at will, which is exactly what Leeds did, Bielsa made changes off the bench, really went for the jugular at that point, then they are going to find you out eventually, and they're going to pick you off eventually, which is what happened in the second half. Again against Reading, it was the substitutes that made the difference, wasn't it? It was the decision at half time to take off Alioski. Less said about his dive, the better, but you know, less said about his performance on the night, the better. And again, I know we seem to come back to this topic all the time, but we will come on to this later on. And Lewis Baker as well, who had a particularly disappointing night given that it was his first league start and a really, really rare opportunity for him to play. The changes that night made a difference again, size and Jack Clark off the bench, just that little bit of class to take Reading out. And that seems to be what's making the difference under Bielsa at the moment, isn't it? It isn't the swashbuckling football of August anymore. It's the fact that Leeds do have that extra gear when they need it. They are able to get themselves out of these games and to find a way. Probably demonstrated that in an even better way, away at Sheffield United. But it's becoming a recurring pattern, isn't it? And it has to be said that he's brave with substitutions, Bielsa. He isn't scared of making them at crucial moments or at early moments. And the substitutions are making a difference.
Yeah, in the last couple of games, there have been deserved substitutions as well. Alioski at the weekend, Bramall Lane was bordering on useless in the first half, and maybe that's a bit harsh, but I think he had 8 touches, was it, you were saying?
Similar against Reading as well. It was about 16 touches in the first half before he was replaced.
And Baker in the first half against Reading was essentially non-existent as well. A couple of touches and turns, but apart from that, not really contributing anything going forward. So to have those options off the bench for Bielsa has been positive, and it would have been some goal, wouldn't it, if Clark and Saiz linked straight up, because they had that chance immediately after the break, didn't they, where Saiz almost scored. It would have been some showing that. But yeah, I mean, you're always looking for players off the bench to make a big impact, and it's been that way in the last few games. But obviously it starts to sort of maybe question then the starting lineup, doesn't it, about whether some of these players should be starting the game outright. Clark is obviously a big one. Saez, obviously another big one. Should they be contributing sort of from the get-go, really? So big contributions from players, but it's a squad game, and they've stepped up when required.
I do think Clark's conditioning is in question, his fitness. I don't mean he's not a fit lad, but I think his ability to go through 90 minutes in a championship game is still to be proven. And there have been periods of the games where he's played where he's looked quite visibly tired, although he did play 45 minutes for the 23s the day before the Reading game. I know you were at that, which would have taken a little bit out of him as well. But I think talent-wise, and more than talent, it's the impact he's making. It is putting his hand up for a starting place. And we've been on about this for a while, but I do feel as if Alioski has been playing his way out of the side for some time. I was a little surprised to see him start at Bramall Lane, but again, you could understand the thinking of Bielsa that defensively Alioski can be very good. Sheffield United were always going to try and dominate early on, and they do like to play out wide with this fairly unique style of overlapping centre-backs, which is what I think Bielsa was talking about when he was chatting on at his press conference ahead of the game, talking about Wilder and saying he does things that they'd never seen before, but he does things that are fairly new ideas and things that Bielsa has tried to, he said in his career previously, has tried to do but hasn't been able to. And I think watching the likes of Basham overlapping, almost playing a winger in periods of the game is very unusual. But for that reason, you could understand why he wanted to be tight on the left. He wanted Alioski to be there for his kind of physical presence and the graft that he does. But he looks out of steam to me, and you're right that if you look at the analysis of it, the statistics behind the games, very few touches of the ball, fewer passes again, virtually nothing in the last two games in terms of creativity. And I know there is this statistic going around that he has the most key passes in the squad at Leeds, that he's produced the most. I think game for game, Pablo Hernandez is a higher statistic than him, but Alioski has laid on the most opportunities. But with the naked eye, it doesn't feel like it, does it? And it doesn't feel as if he's laying on the key chances for Leeds. And I would suspect against Queen's Park Rangers this weekend, it's going to be the bench for him.
Yeah, I don't really know what will work in trying to get his confidence back, whether it's time spent on the bench or what. I can't imagine he's ever going to go back into the 23s, so how is he going to gain that sort of confidence back? He's going to have to play football, isn't he?
He also basically said he's played too much, though, didn't he? After the game, he said he's had a fair few games away with Macedonia. He's been ever present in the Championship for Leeds. He did play in both League Cup games, so he's ticking on towards 30 games already, and we're only just into December. So you would deduce from that Bielsa maybe feels that he doesn't need a run in the 23s. He doesn't need anything other than just a short break and a bit of rest to clear his head and clear his legs.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, Calvin Phillips has pretty much played every game, hasn't he? I know he doesn't play at international level, but he's still consistently performing at a high level.
He's a bit of a physical freak, though, Phillips, isn't he? Starting to look like a real machine.
There's just a lot of movement and not a lot of end product with Alioski, isn't there? And it's starting to just grow a bit thin when you see players stepping off the bench and contributing a lot more. You see Clark take on two or three players within 5 minutes of coming on Saturday, and you just see everything that you want from Alioski and more, don't you? Like you mentioned before there, Clark's conditioning. He's obviously completed lots of 90 minutes in the 23s and always comes through well, but I think we know, and I think you said, I can't remember if it was you or someone else who was chatting about Jamie Shackleton's comments about just the difference in leap of everything being quicker and stronger and everything like that at the Championship level, and that's just the way it is, isn't it? And it's managing that transition period from the 23s and getting Clark up to speed. And obviously that assist at the weekend was sort of composure personified, wasn't it, for an 18-year-old lad to have the awareness to pick out Pablo Hernandez in the middle of the box rather than just leather it at goal like most other young lads would have done was fantastic. And maybe it's time for him to have a start, but the only question comes back in is then, if he's gassed out by half time, what do you have then, you know, if it's still level off the bench? So interesting dilemma for Bielsa.
Well, I think this is why the options in January, and it really aren't getting the vibes at the moment that there's going to be an awful lot done. And I guess if you look at the league table and the consistency so far, and if you listen to Bielsa's comments and his faith in this squad, you can almost understand why there isn't a mad rush to get much in. But the left wing looks like the one area for me where a quality signing there, a really clever, intelligent signing, could make a big difference to the starting lineup as it stands. I think if you're wanting a centre back, add to the squad. And granted, you know, we have an issue with Liam Cooper's fitness now, but you'd be talking about cover, really, wouldn't you? You'd be talking about somebody to pad out the squad in the event that you end up without defenders. But I do think on the left wing that there's a big difference to be made there. And I go back to Harvey Barnes, who we saw at West Brom last month, who very nearly joined Leeds in the summer. That he's a very different animal in terms of a left winger to Alioski. And actually, when you watch Clark attacking the byline, always going for the byline, always going past men, playing in that style, and you compare his style to Alioski's, do you think Alioski is actually a winger? Or, as he has for Macedonia quite often, is he more of a left-back stroke left-wing-back as opposed to an out-and-out left-sided attacker who wants to get past players and go to the byline? Because, to be honest, the more I watch him play, the more I start to wonder.
The answer is I don't know, because it's weird. When he first arrived, I think we've talked about it before, but I always remember that Forest game in last, I think it was 18 months ago in August, and he was knocking the ball past players in that game, taking them on, using his skill, and he was playing with full of confidence. I don't know where that's gone. I know obviously he was playing on the right, sort of under Christiansen at that time, but it's just odd how he's sort of gone from that free-flowing attacking winger to now looking like he should be moved further back into left-back role, that he's never going to ever budge Barry Douglas out of. So, like you say, he's almost playing himself out of the side. I don't know if maybe his confidence is just really low at the moment, that he's just scared of doing anything wrong and he's picking possibly the easy option out. We've just not seen him knock the ball past anyone, have we, this season? That's the issue.
A few of us said last season that he did seem to be more effective on the right than he did on the left. I don't think it's an issue for him to play on either side in terms of which foot he prefers and that sort of thing. But it did seem as if he understood his position on the right-hand side more, as if he was more able to have an effect there. But quite honestly, there is zero chance of him or anybody else playing ahead of Pablo Hernandez while Hernandez is in the form he's in. I mean, it's just goals and assists from Pablo, and he's playing as well as he has for Leeds. You know, he's 33 now, and I don't think they've ever seen him in better form than this. I would genuinely question the last time he was in better form, full stop. You know, it's 4 years now since he left Swansea to go over to the Middle East. And I still think that when you see how talented he is and how effective he is, I still think that is a player selling himself massively short. I'm sure the money was great in Qatar. I'm sure he earned nicely from it. I'm sure it was a sensible decision from a family point of view, and no criticism of that. But you do think that there was a player who, at the age of 30, should have been sticking around and playing at a high level of European football. But him on the right leaves no space for anybody else, because that position is taken.
Yeah, one interesting thing that you could take away from Friday night, obviously went to the 23s with Newcastle United Premier League Cup tie, but Izzy Brown moved out to the left after half time and was really, really good cutting in onto his right from that far side. And that I just wonder whether that might be an option when he's back to fully sort of up to speed, fully fit, whether that might be an option to replace Alioski out on that left-hand side. Because obviously, I think we all agree that if there was more experience on that left side waiting, that Alioski would have lost his spot 4 or 5 games ago. But because obviously it's Clark who's making his first steps into senior football, it's been sort of difficult for that transition period.
And Harrison hasn't really knocked on the door
particularly. Yes, absolutely. So it'd be interesting to see if Brown maybe becomes a clearer option on that left-hand side, obviously to try and get all these attacking players into the actual starting 11. That might be another way for Bielsa to go. Newcastle, and obviously 23s, but they couldn't live with him sort of last half an hour he was on the pitch. And I think he should have had a couple of goals at least, and he's looked really sharp in the last few games now since he made his comeback. So interesting to see if that develops into anything.
It is a bonus start for Bielsa. I mean, it's easy to draw comparisons at the moment with, you know, last season under Christensen, the season under Gary Monk, where January on both occasions well placed and nicely positioned in the Championship. But in neither of those seasons did they have a good transfer window or an effective transfer window. But also, in neither of those seasons did they have anything in reserve waiting to come through. He's in quite a unique position, Bielsa, that he's reaching this point of the season. He's reaching the transfer window. With Bamford coming back, he thinks he'll be fit and ready to play around about Christmas, which, you know, 2 or 3 weeks now. Izzy Brown is pretty much there in terms of being in contention. I don't think in contention to start a game. Bielsa certainly doesn't sound like he's going to rush him at all. And the same with Bamford. But it's going to get to the point where, very soon, where Brown will have had enough under-23's time under his belt, and he, I think, will come into the picture. Bielsa's press conferences are always a bit of a magical mystery tour, whether it's bollocking us for forcing him to turn up on a Monday afternoon, or whether it's coming up with stories related to people like Hernan Crespo that you never ever expected to come up in a press conference before, for the sake of argument, Preston North End at home. This is going back 2 weeks now, but we were asking him about Bailey Peacock-Farrell. In fact, we weren't asking him about Bailey Peacock-Farrell. We were asking him about Jamal Blackman's injury, to which he replied that Blackman was going to start against Bristol City had he not broken his leg, and was going to replace Bailey Peacock-Farrell. And he was telling us all this because he thought it was important that Peacock-Farrell, A, knew that he was going to be dropped from the point of view of improving his form, but also important that it was known publicly so that Blackman, it was made very clear that Blackman had done enough to get his place in the team, and also made very clear that Bailey Peacock-Farrell was in a position where he was going to lose his place because his form and his performances hadn't been good enough. I don't think I've ever seen or heard a manager speak about a player like that, particularly when they're not backed into a corner in terms of Peacock-Farrell's form. He's made mistakes and there've been issues with his game, and I think some good saves at Sheffield United on Saturday, some big saves, but equally some issues under high balls, which I think you would want addressed in a, you know, over the course of a season. But it wasn't as if Bielsa had to tell us that at all, was it? And I don't know, the more you think about it and the more you consider his motivation for doing it, the more you think it's purely a kind of personal whim, because I don't think many other coaches would have dared to have said that.
No, I'm not sure why he did, but then again, you mentioned the Crespo story there, and the basic apology there was that he lied to Crespo, wasn't
yeah.
it? So maybe it kind of stems from that experience of wanting to be fully honest and upfront with his players, but I just don't know whether it'd be better to do that in private and just say, look, pull him to one side. I'm not going to sort of have a go at you in the media or public eye sort of thing. But fair play to him. I suppose maybe he just thinks that's what he needed to do to get a response from Bailey Peacock-Farrell. I think we've talked about it before, about Heckenbottom saying that he needed to book his ideas up a little bit, sort of January time last year, February.
Well, I think Heckenbottom said to him, if you at the moment cannot prove that you are a better option than Wiedwald, who was really struggling, or Lonergan, who obviously is coming to the back end of his career and was really there to be a number two, then you may as well leave the club. That was pretty much the conversation, which suggests that from time to time Peacock-Farrell maybe does need a nudge in the right direction, and perhaps needs it done in a way which really makes him think and isn't sort of quietly behind closed doors, which this certainly wasn't.
And maybe because he's had such a crazy whirlwind 8 months or so, maybe that was the thinking behind it, because he's obviously got comfortable being Leeds United's number one and gone away with Northern Ireland. Maybe he's thinking, this has all come to me a bit easy here, and maybe he's taken his foot off gas. You obviously don't know sort of the ins and outs, but I think he's done fairly well since he came back in. Obviously the big vital penalty save was, it's funny how football works, isn't it? Just absolutely written for that to happen. Obviously missed the Bristol City game. Will Huffer did an alright job, not that he was tested that much, but yeah, just a weird way of treating your only goalkeeper, basically, at the
yeah,
club.
Particularly on the basis
it seems
that
to have worked.
Yeah, particularly on the basis that January was a month away and you had seven, eight, nine games in between, and an absolute reliance on this guy. My concern about Bielsa saying that was that if Peacock-Farrell had reacted badly to it, evidently in January there's an option to replace him. I don't think there's any doubt that we will see another keeper coming in when the transfer window opens. I suspect that'll probably be one of the earliest deals that's done. But in the meantime, they need Peacock-Farrell to play well. They need him to have a good run of games, because no offence to Will Huffer at all, and I thought some of his handling under pressure was very good against Bristol City, but he wasn't put under a lot of pressure in that game, and there were little wobbly moments where I think it was quite apparent that if you were pushing him further than you should at this stage, you were running the risk of something bad going wrong. And I don't think in any way Bielsa would want to have relied on Huffer leading up to January. I say that knowing full well that there seems to be literally nobody at Thorpe Arch that Bielsa is not prepared to rely on in some circumstances, in desperate circumstances. And again, we'll speak about that in a little bit, because it's been really quite a compelling issue in this season, and it's been a big factor in keeping Leeds at the top of the division. But from Peacock-Farrell's point of view, the penalty save against Reading, that was a terrific save, actually. It really was. Bottom corner, not in any way a particularly bad penalty from Mark McNulty. But then at Sheffield United too, obviously I talked a little bit about the the issues under the high balls, and that was very obvious. But a very good save from McGoldrick in the first half, probably a better save from McGoldrick in the second half, when it was, you know, it was pretty much Peacock Farrell between him and the net, and crucial moments in the end, because 82 minutes in, Dean Henderson has a real brainstorm, awful pass to Jack Clark, Hernandez sticks it away, and suddenly it's a first Leeds win at Bramall Lane since 1992.
Yeah, an odd decision from the goalkeeper. I don't know why he didn't just boot it into the stand, to be honest.
Absolutely.
I imagine that 9 times out of 10 in that scenario he probably would have done, but for some reason just had a complete brain fart, decided to pass it to Jack Clark. I don't know, even looking back at the replay, I'm not even sure how he's thinking he's going to even get that pass there to the defender, because it's such a tamely hit ball. But
it's that issue of playing out from the back, though, isn't it? It's
the
way in which teams try to commit to it. I thought we saw it with Bristol City. They were trying to do that, but I didn't think there was much enthusiasm amongst their defenders to take balls in tight areas and to be put under pressure in that way.
Yeah, but it just comes back to just sometimes it just has to be done. Route one is the way, and sometimes it's just getting back to that. Sort of not overcomplicating things, isn't it? And that's just the result of something that happened. Obviously, Chris Wilder came out and said he wasn't going to rub his head or whatever, which is, you know, fair enough. He's a championship goalkeeper, but just an odd mistake. But a great assist from Jack Clark. And it has to be said as well, a great finish. On the first time, that ball's bouncing across to Hernandez. There's a fair few players that I've seen at Elland Road in the past that would have put that over the bar. So
you'd have murdered anybody missing that, though, wouldn't
you? Yeah, I know, absolutely.
You've got the one player you want there with ample composure, and even Hernandez said, I didn't hit it too cleanly, but you just want to...
Doesn't matter if it's the back of the net, does it? No.
And it's in... The key, I thought, apart from the missed chances from Sheffield United and Billy Sharp's header in the first half, I think that was the critical moment for them. That was the chance, a few yards out, header. He was strangely quiet, actually. I think everybody would have had money on him to score, because he always does against Leeds.
And especially with Cooper going off as well.
Yeah. But the defensive organisation of Leeds and the way in which they hung in a game where they knew Sheffield United were likely to have a lot of the ball. I was having a look, it's the first game this season, and what are we, 20 games in? First game this season that Leeds have gifted the larger share of possession to the opposition. I say gifted, I've come up with the smaller share of possession than the opposition, which is obviously contrary to the way that Bielsa does try to play, but I think is a good example of the way that Sheffield United play under Wilder, and the fact that Leeds were never ever going to have it their own way down there. I thought to hang in and to pick the game off, albeit with a really fortuitous goal, made that probably the best win of the season, to be honest. And like I say, I'm on there for 26 years. Difficult ground. Do you know, as well, I was having a look back before the weekend, the 2.5 years under Wilder, they'd only lost 9 games at home. Defeats at home weren't in double figures. I do think that is a really, really significant result, even though Bielsa was doing his best to play it down afterwards, as he always does.
Well, it was a 0-0 draw, wasn't it, until that mistake, and it felt sort of as the game progressed, albeit with a referee that didn't know how to referee the situation, it felt like it was going to be either a massive mistake or a moment of brilliance that was going to decide the game, but it was a 0-0 game with a mistake in it. But yeah, it's funny how when maybe we'll look back in 5 months and go, blimey, that was a result that really started, sort of kicked on into this festive period, because 3 wins after, you see, like, what was it, 3 weeks ago, Leeds were getting pumped at the Hawthorns, and we were sort of going, oh, this is like sort of now or never job. And
yeah,
to come away with 3 wins from 3 after that 4-1 demolition is a great response, and given the squad, you know, the amount of injuries that Bielsa has had to manage in this little run as well. And now we're going into a festive period that they've got however many, I think it was 7 games now from now till New Year. And it's not potentially going to define the season, but if you go winless in this run or you go unbeaten, that's a big, big difference in where you're going to be in such a short period of time. So it'll be interesting to see, but it's funny, isn't it, how history sometimes repeats itself, and it could be the significant win that was 26 years ago. It could be, obviously not title clinching, but could be something that really kickstarts Leeds this season.
I guess that's superstition, and I don't imagine Bielsa gives much thought to that. But I was doing a bit of number crunching earlier on, and 39 points from 20 games Leeds have got, which is, you know, give or take 2 points a game, the figure that everybody tries to aim for. Since the turn of the century, 28 teams have had 39 points or more after 20 games. How many of them have gone on to be promoted?
So is it 29?
28.
22.
22 is right.
Oh, what a guess.
22 is absolutely
right. I haven't
right.
looked so at anything.
80% of teams who have 39 points or more at this stage of the season.
Wow, that's a large
promoted.
Portion. So what you're saying is Leeds are not getting promoted.
For the sake of my own personal safety, I'm saying absolutely nothing. How many of those 28 clubs failed to at least make the playoffs?
Oh. 4?
1.
Ah, really?
Watford in 2001.
What happened there?
It's virtually never happened. They
fell off a cliff.
They started like a train and were unstoppable really for two months. It was Graham Taylor's last season as manager, and then they did fall off a cliff. Yeah, they went, I think it was 8 wins from 31 games or something like that. So it was a bit of a flash in the pan that season. But give or take, every team that has been in this position in the Championship has done enough at this stage to pretty much put themselves in with a great shout of going up. So, you know, there isn't really much way of downplaying the form that Leeds are in or the position they're in the league either. We got a guest appearance from Mike Dean for the Reading game. Not everybody's favourite referee, but a select group official. And I thought had a very good night against Reading. He got the Alioski dive absolutely spot on. And let's just say, for the sake of impartiality and also for Brentford's programme writers, that that was as much of a dive as Ollie Watkins was against Brentford. Every bit as poor, every bit as blatant, and on this occasion, rightly punished. But I thought he got the penalty at the end right as well. I did think it was a foul. I think Douglas said himself afterwards that Peacock Farrell dug him out of a hole. And the contrast between that and Oliver Langford at Bramall Lane on Saturday was astonishing. And there's no point asking Bielsa about referees, because he literally says nothing and will not criticise him ever, which I think does him a lot of credit. But I was pleased that Chris Wilder did say afterwards there were a lot of odd decisions going on. The worst of the bunch being the non-yellow card for Ender Stevens, which would have been a red card late in the first half, on the basis that he evidently saw that clearly and must have known that it should have been a booking. Missing the McGoldrick studs down the shin of Matthias Kleek was not great either. But in terms of, people were saying, we didn't have the benefit of TV replays, but people were saying that Sharp's header in the first half was offside, that, you know, there was all sorts going on, loads of shirt pulling and everything else. Did not seem to be on top of that game at all.
No, there's a fine line, isn't there, between letting them play in a Yorkshire derby and then just letting stuff go that shouldn't be letting go. You know, the Kleek tackle, if you take that in isolation, and he's clearly, he can't have seen it. Like, clearly not. He must be following
the
ball.
Well, we didn't see
something.
It, did we? We weren't looking at that, or we didn't have a clear sight.
No,
of
obviously
that,
we're up in the
gods,
but he's 5 yards away.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's a slight difference there, isn't there? But he's either following the ball or he's looking up at the sky. I don't know what he's doing, because he's clearly not seeing that. And that in isolation, then you go, fine. But like you just said there, the Ender Stevens one for the second yellow, what should have been a second yellow, he's seen, he's given a free kick. It's a yellow card offence. So is it just because it's before the break he's not giving it, or is it just because he doesn't want to ruin the game? I don't know. It's just the Championship. And it's not just Leeds, we have to say. There's lots of fans that have complained about officials up and down the country in the Championship this season. But for some reason, and I don't know why, it seems to have taken a bigger downturn this year in sort of the terms of the quality of officials. And I don't know why it's suddenly become such a big leap from sort of Premier League refereeing, like we saw with that Mike Dean on Tuesday against Reading. You saw the difference, didn't you, straight away? And it was a massive difference, and I don't really know why. On Friday night, actually, funnily enough, I was sat next to a referee assessor. So I was talking to him, because we mentioned it a few weeks ago on the podcast. But obviously just trying to understand, like, sort of what the work is. So he has like an iPad thing with like its own app that they have. And he was marking sort of like red for a wrong decision, orange for a decision that could like either go either way, or something that he might have could have done better, and a green for a good decision. So obviously he's going along the game, watching that. And then, so basically he goes and writes a big report and then matches it up to some video analysis. And then they sort of like clip goes with the report section. And then basically every referee, whether it's under 23s to Professional Development League to Championship to Premier League, gets one of these feedback videos and reports after every game. So I wonder what Oliver Langford's would have been like on Saturday night. But it's
well,
just,
well, it's like Jeremy Simpson's after Brentford. I don't think there's any way of dressing it up, is there?
What? Obviously, Jeremy Simpson still refereed in the Championship the week after that game. I'm assuming Oliver Langford will probably be managing but in the Football League this week.
But there is a finite number of officials, isn't there? Which is always the issue with
how
this.
How do you then, like, how do you judge them? Do you have to start having, like, a promotion relegation situation? Like, because so, if he has another game like that this weekend, not on telly, but fans are left wondering. I just don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
My understanding, and this goes back a few years, but was that they were assessed at the end of every season. They were effectively given a pass into the next season or not. And the issue comes that as much as people would like to see referees dropped, if every referee that performs poorly or has a bad day is dropped, you end up in a scenario where you don't have enough qualified referees, as opposed to just match officials, linesmen, fourth officials, enough referees to manage the games between 92 Football League, Premier League clubs. So it is a complicated one, but they are all assessed, and obviously you have the manager's reports after the games as well, which are in no way impartial, and you know are going to be influenced by, you know, by bias. And you could use Saturday as an example. What would Chris Wilder have said about the referee had Sheffield United nicked it towards the end? Would he have said we should have had Stevens sent off in the first half? Would he have said McGoldrick should have gone for studs down the shin? Or would he just have said, as tends to always happen when clubs win games, when managers win games, just say, I thought he did okay today.
Yeah, probably, but I think it was equally rubbish for both teams, to be honest. Maybe not equally, because Leeds had what seemed like two or three big decisions go against them, but he was bad for Sheffield United as well, just by giving stupid free kicks that weren't free kicks. And even at one point, I think there was a moment where Roof kicked it off like Norwood or someone like that in the first half or second half, and the linesman pointed for a Sheffield United throw in, and even the crowd around us just started going like, I just started laughing. And when it gets to that point where it's just past the point of like being like, what are you on about, it kind of just feels like the game is gone by that point. And it was just, I don't know what the answer is, but we keep seeing these officials, and they just have such a large effect on the game, whether they give certain decisions or don't. I'm at the point where I don't actually know what's best to do with them.
Well, we've got VAR in the Premier League next year, but it's not going to be coming to the Championship.
But then if you have
soon,
to start doing VAR for every single decision, how much is that going to break up the game?
But a lot of sports have embraced that, though, haven't they? You do need television. If you want
a coach's challenge.
If you want to be strictly accurate about it all, you do need to review as many situations as possible. I think in football, there needs to be a line drawn under certain decisions. Otherwise, literally, for example, throw-ins and so on, you could spend all day analysing those. I remember that one you're talking about at the start of the second half. And it's amazing how when poor decisions start to pile up, particularly a couple of big ones, that everything seems to go wrong and everything seems to be out
of
kilter.
Yeah, we can't do anything right now.
No.
So let's just do everything wrong.
No, very much so.
It feels like I am just having a go at them. And I understand that they're human and they'll make mistakes in... And like you say, the isolation with the click tackle, you just say that's an isolated incident, he just missed it. But it's just the inconsistent then decision making constantly throughout the afternoon.
You used the phrase there which I hate, which is ruin the game. You ruin the game by sending somebody off. To my mind, it's a yellow card if it's a yellow card, it's a red card if it's a red card, and that applies in the first minute, it applies in the 90th minute. It doesn't make any difference what the spectacle of the game should be or how much people have paid to be there, how important the game is.
Absolutely.
Them's the rules.
But it seems that a lot of Championship referees have an issue in maybe doing that, because on Saturdays there should have been a red card.
You're going to get an FA charge.
Can the FA charge me?
No.
Well,
no, but they probably would if they could, but you might be joining Pontus Janssen in the bad boys corner. Yeah.
True enough. But I won't speak to Sky Sports after this, though.
Just don't swear. Just don't swear. We touched on Alioski earlier, and in the interest of being objective about everybody, we've said amongst ourselves, haven't we, that there's a kind of feeling that Lewis Baker is not Bielsa's go-to guy when games are going wrong, when he needs the games to change. It very rarely seems to be Baker that he goes for from the bench. It was a surprise to see him play against Reading, because that came out of nowhere. And not only at Leeds, that was his first league start anywhere for 14 months. He'd go back to September 2017 when Gary Monk was still at Middlesbrough for the last time he played from the start of a championship match. He said when he came here that Tony Pulis's style hadn't helped him at Middlesbrough, hadn't suited him, hadn't really given him much of a chance of being in the team, and that he thought it would be completely different here. He's played really as little here as he was at Middlesbrough, give or take a slight difference, I guess. And that was a poor evening from a player who, quite honestly, Bielsa doesn't seem inclined to use anyway. So I sort of wonder what lies ahead for him, and whether this season is going to end up being another washout, or is he going to be somebody who actually does come into his own as this season goes on? Because I'm not seeing it at the moment.
No, and I think you touched on an important thing there, in that Jamie Shackleton seems to be the one that Bielsa goes to instead of him, which says a lot, doesn't it, about how he views Baker. Like you say, it was a sort of left field choice, wasn't it, to have him out on for the Reading game. And you just felt like that 45 minutes there was important for him in terms of winning a place in the team, because like you just said there, you've got Brown coming back, who's also more competition for the position that he plays, and to not produce anything in that 45 minutes was sort of a big indictment on him, and it kind of felt like Bielsa hauling him off. It almost, not quite maybe, but almost last chance saloon for him.
We're gonna get overtaken shortly, I think, by official news about Liam Cooper. He obviously limped off in the first half with a knee injury. First glance and in plain sight, you kind of wondered if his season was done. It looked, he was really struggling to put weight on his leg. The way he was hitting the ground as well made you think that he was very concerned about the damage that had been done. We haven't had any official news on this apart from what Bielsa said over the weekend, that it's not ligament damage, which I think is confirmation of the fact that Cooper will be back this season and will play again. I think the likelihood is that it may require a small op. He's probably looking at 4, 6, 8 weeks out, something like that, which is a long stretch at this period of the season, because that would take Leeds well into the new year. But it's certainly better than the 4 months that Bamford was facing. It's better than the nigh on 12 months that Izzy Brown has been dealing with after the ACL that he had on loan at Brighton last season, and still to get back to first team football after that. He's a bit Marmite, Cooper, isn't he? Some people like him, some people don't. There are aspects of his game that are really impressive. There are aspects of his game that don't quite seem to be perfect or don't quite seem to be right. But I do think he's played very well this season in quite a quiet, understated way. I think he's been impressive. I think he's definitely improved. Not to the extent of somebody like Calvin Phillips, but I think they're a little bit comparable in that way. His style of play has changed. He's been good at distributing from the back. And everyone I speak to as well says that his captaincy off the pitch is excellent. The way that he interacts with the players, deals with Bielsa, the things he does, the shirt for Jamal Blackman, a little message for Jamal Blackman after he broke his leg. Some people might think that's a bit twee, a little bit over the top, but I think it's what Cooper is good at in the background. He's a popular guy. Someone's telling me this week that he's godfather to Stuart Dallas's boy, who was born earlier this year. And it's hearing as well that Hull City were quite keen on him last season, but actually Leeds were very, very set on keeping Cooper, very clear that he was a big player in the dressing room, that he had more to offer as a centre-back. And I do think he, in theory, will be missed. I know nobody seems to be being missed under Bielsa. Players just seem to drop out and really the form kind of keeps on going. But I do wonder whether this might be one that they kind of struggle to deal with if it does end up being month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah, I would probably throw him in the bracket with Calvin Phillips in terms of his consistency. I think he's been one of the most improved, but also sort of the most consistent players that Bielsa's had under his sort of tutelage this season. I think he's been about as improved as he could have been. I think he has an unfair nickname, doesn't he, that we won't mention. But I think he's starting to get rid of that a little bit. I think a lot of Leeds fans can see that he gives his all for the shirt, and he plays as hard as he can and as well as he can every time. And like you say, the captaincy stuff, maybe that'll be something that they miss on the field as well, going forward. But it's a big blow. But like you say, you've got Halm, who's stepped in, so does he now just automatically step into that role alongside Pontus Janssen if they play a four. It's just, I don't remember anything like this at Leeds, where just you think you're getting everyone, like one player back, and then you lose another, just drop like flies.
But equally, do you remember a situation at Leeds where you think a player's dropping out of the team and you think it's going to do immense damage because of how good they are and because of how pivotal they are to the system and the way they play? And yet, in actual fact, in terms of results, it seems to make no difference whatsoever.
No, not at all. But I guess that's down to coaching, isn't it? And I mean, he's always wanted this small squad, hasn't he, Bielsa? And it just seems that, well, I think we mentioned it before, but it's that attitude of next man up, isn't it, and it just seems to have worked. And obviously, we know that a lot of the under-23s, if not all of them, pretty much train with the first team on a daily basis. So it seems like they're all well drilled into the formation. So like slotting Halm in there has been sort of seamless. So that, I think that's why he keeps saying he doesn't want anyone in January, because he's got players that he believes can just, the one thing you lose is experience, isn't it? If you're having a back line with Halm in there, if then Janssen gets injured and you have to put like Struwick in there and you've got four appearances between them, but he believes that they'll fit the system. It's just all very, I don't know.
I don't think Bielsa rates experience over the value of having worked with him and followed his coaching for a sustained period of time. It's not a secret that Leeds offered him the chance to take an emergency goalkeeper on a sort of 7-day deal when Peacock Farrell was ruled out of the Bristol City game. Minor knee injury for Peacock Farrell, but it essentially left no recognised first choice, no recognised senior goalkeeper. And I'm pretty sure that Leeds would have been given dispensation by the EFL to brought somebody in. The fact that they couldn't sign anybody from the Premier League, which is a slightly odd rule that the Premier League enforce, meant that they were picking from the Championship. I was told they did look at Jonathan Bond down at West Brom, but when, no disrespect to Bond, that was the type of level of keeper you were looking at, someone who wasn't playing, wasn't really involved, and on top of that you were kind of looking for a fellow Championship club to do you a favour by saying, absolutely, we'll sort out your goalkeeping crisis, yeah, why not, when very pleased about the fact that Leeds were down on a recognised number one. But what you're saying there is absolutely right. From the very start of the summer, when people like Jamie Shackleton were involved, a lot of the under-23s have trained with Bielsa and have trained with the first-team squad. And even some who haven't played, Callum Nisel has been up there. Somebody was telling me that more recently, Robbie Gotts, that little dynamic fullback in the 23s, he's up with Bielsa's squad now. Leif Davis is somebody, the signing from Morecambe in the summer, he was on the bench away at West Brom in the absence of other defensive options. Talking very highly of him, and I think very keen to start trying to push him through. And it does seem to be Bielsa's way that he would rather have Will Huffer in goal, because Will Huffer has trained under him, has been coached by Bielsa and his staff, and therefore knows the drill, knows exactly what's happening. He would rather use Halmy as a centre back than bring somebody in January, because Halmy has trained under him, been coached by his staff, and knows the drill. And what you're starting to see is that every youngster who comes into the team seems to know what they're doing, seems to know where they fit, seems to know how the team plays and what they need to do. And I am honestly starting to think that may be a really crucial factor when this season winds up. The fact that they've been able to ride this period of losing Ayling, Berardi, Hernandez, Roof, Bamford, sustained injuries, and added to that list now Cooper, by essentially turning to under-23s, development squad kids, and saying, right, you're in. And I mean, I asked Bielsa a couple of weeks back, and I think it must have been after the Ayling and Berardi injuries, saying, will you now go in January and find some defensive cover to make sure that you do at least have the numbers? And he sat and he listened to the translation from Salim Lamrani, and he said, no. That was it. It's the same with Halmy. What are you going to do now that Cooper's out? I'll play Halmy. That's it. And there's no question of, we're really stretched, we're in a lot of trouble here, desperately need to get to January, we're going to have to do some business. It almost seems like a case of everybody's drilled, everybody knows what the score is, everybody knows the script, and at any given moment, no matter who is missing from the team, there is somebody there that Bielsa knows he's coached enough to be able to throw in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we also see the 23s play the same formation and style and things like that, and it's all about developing that attitude at Thorpe Arch of everyone plays like the first team, the transition that Corbrand's now overseeing between the 23s and the first team. And it just all comes back to that fact, isn't it? And Halms stepped in there and played well, albeit against, I think, Bristol City was a little bit protected by the system. But I think, like you say there, it's just all about the next man up attitude. And the attitude of, well, I've got belief in these players probably helps his squad as well. Because if he was sat in press conferences saying, oh, I'm panicking about this and et cetera, et cetera, I need a defender, blah, 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 you know, that might end up translating onto the pitch of, he doesn't think I'm ready, he wants a better centre-half. Whereas to throw confidence into your younger players who maybe don't have the experience that you'd like at Championship level that he doesn't seem to care about, like you say, it just, I don't know, it seems to have bred confidence. And like you say, for these players to know the system inside out and basically know it in their sleep, therefore he just thinks, why not? So fair play to him so far.
It's nice for Halmy as well. I mean, the last thing I remember seeing of him last season, when he seemed to be injured constantly, was of driving out of Thorpe Arch after a press conference, him leaning on a pair of crutches with one foot in a bandage waiting for a taxi to come and pick him up. And you did think, Jesus, you know, how far away from Helsinki must this boy feel? But he was similar to Huffer against Bristol City. The basics were fine, no question at all, but no real pressure put on him in that particular game. But the way he played against Sheffield United, I thought it was very hard not to be impressed by that. Yeah. There was the one bad error that almost let McGoldrick in for a goal when it's 0-0 in the second half. But in general, the way he read the game, his positioning, and his physical strength as well, he looks ready to play. And I don't, again, you know that there's risk involved with him playing if Cooper's absent. And of course, there's the option of playing Calvin Phillips in there. But I think if Halmy does play, you don't feel as if it's a desperate measure. You don't feel as if it's necessarily liable to go wrong at any moment. One of the things we spotted at Sheffield United was the fact that, and we didn't ask him about this afterwards, I should have done really, he also was playing Phillips as a wide centre-back. So rather than the middle of the three, which puts him in the best position to bring the ball out, to pass the ball, to use his range of passing, he started on the right hand side of defence, moved to the left hand side of the back three when Cooper went off. And I do think he played like an out and out centre back. I thought Phillips, he played as if he'd been in that role forever. He's very, very good once again, as he has been all season. But they are definitely losing some of his passing range in that role. They aren't getting the same sort of distribution and the same sort of, I guess, tight dynamic passing in tight areas from Forshaw as they are from Phillips, who is probably at this stage player of the season so far.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think this weekend it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I think QPR tend to just play with one player up front. So whether he decides to slot Halm into the back four with Janssen and move Phillips back into that quarterback role as we describe it, That for me would be the best thing to do, because like you said there, you miss a lot of the range of passing. You also miss his sort of ability to win the ball back in midfield. But I mean, anything that's thrown at him this season, he's just responded with a great performance, hasn't he? There's not really been, I'm trying to think back now about any games where I've thought Phillips hasn't been great today, or he's always
the game at Swansea and the game against Birmingham where he was substituted before half time. Although I think we've taken issue with Bielsa saying, you know, it's my responsibility every time that the club lose, and that, you know, the argument being that at some point the blame's got to fall on the players as well. But I think in both of those games there were tactical issues and there were tactical problems. I think away at Swansea, Phillips never got into that game, got himself booked. Against Birmingham, the setup just wasn't working against Birmingham's front two, and he was obviously the fall guy for that. But no, with the exception of that, he. Again, a little like Hernandez, I've never seen Phillips play this well for Leeds. I've never seen him play like this for Leeds. You know, never mind playing well, it's the role and everything else.
If you'd have said
a
year ago what he's doing now, I think most people would have laughed at you. It's just crazy, isn't it, the turnaround. And again, it comes back to great coaching and identify a player's strengths. Because, I mean, we saw him in how many different roles in midfield last year. I mean, it's just incredible, isn't it? I mean, you run out of words to describe how much he's improved. And like you say, he's turning into player of the year, sort of, not even candidate, like clear winner at this point of the season. We're only in nearly Christmas.
Just to wrap up, a couple of little whispers of transfers and you know, that side of business. Link this week with Jack Clark to Manchester City. Talk of interest from Pep Guardiola. Interestingly, they were the club who were hovering about him when Leeds signed him to a professional deal last November. People might remember that Christensen had talked about playing Clark in a League Cup game away at Leicester in the fourth round, and a few of us had expected him to be involved in that game, but said subsequently that they didn't play him because he wasn't tied to a pro deal and they didn't want to advertise to the world that he was A, a good player, and B, pretty much free to go, and certainly free to go in when you've got as much money as Man City have. I don't know what Man City are intending with him. I suspect that talk of a January move is probably pretty unlikely. But there is Premier League interest in him. There's bound to be Premier League interest in him. There's going to be more as a result of his recent games. So that's going to be one to watch. He's got a contract till 2021. But as we were saying about someone like Peacock Farrell a while ago, when you sign a pro deal, you're on very good wage, don't get me wrong, but you're not on a wage which complements what the average first-team championship player is earning. So that might be something that Leeds have to look at some stage. Pavel Chybicki, Swedish striker who came here last season, has finished his loan at Molde in Norway. The loan runs officially till January, but Molde's season is done, so he's kind of free to come back. Our understanding is that he won't be involved under Bielsa. He wasn't given a look in the summer, isn't likely to be given a look in January either. I don't think Bielsa is interested in integrating him in the way that, as last season went on, Paul Heckenbottom wasn't interested in using him either. I think his race is probably run at Leeds, and from what I'm being told, there's some MLS interest in him. I think Molde or other Norwegian clubs, Swedish clubs, Scandinavian sides might well be interested in taking him back on loan for the start of their season. So I don't expect to see him around at Leeds anytime soon, and certainly be very surprised to see him back in the starting lineup and involved again under Bielsa. So this weekend, Queen's Park Rangers at home.
Steve McLaren,
Matt Smith. They looked in deep trouble at the start of the season. They got smashed away at West Brom, badly beaten by Bristol City, and a lot of people were kind of wondering if McLaren was going to make it out of the first month of the season. They're kind of mid-table, but they've had good little bursts of form under him, and probably quite a dangerous side on the day.
And let's not forget, we've got a lovely FA Cup trip there.
We've got three games against QPR in the space of 2 months.
Yay! Anyway,
it's incredible, isn't it, that given how desperate Sky are to have Leeds on the telly, and given that the companies who televise the FA Cup would probably be quite keen on that as well, that somebody isn't trying to fiddle the draw to at least give us something decent every now and again. I know we had Liverpool away in the League Cup under Gary Monk. That was a cracking tie, but that it took until the quarter final to get to that point. Two Premier League games last season, but you know, no disrespect, Burnley and Leicester okay, you know, Premier League champions, as was, but you were looking for Bielsa, Guardiola, weren't you? Bielsa, Mourinho, assuming he lasts that long. Bielsa, Klopp, something.
I don't know.
Pochettino, something like that.
I was looking forward to Solihull Moors away.
Well, you did say to me on text that if it was walking away that you were busy that week. But if the press room was like Leicester's with cheese boards and muffins and fridges of lager, yeah, then yeah, you'd be in
Mind
the back
you,
of the
QPR
car.
QPR have been up to the Premier League. What's their press room like?
They look after you pretty well.
Ah, oh, well, there you go, then I'll come down.
It just always seems to be Championship club away from home, which you've got to try and get excited about. But as far as this weekend goes, this is another game to win, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And just a team that are wildly inconsistent, which makes them weirdly dangerous. I don't know if that even makes sense, but they're just a team that's obviously going to come here with sort of no expectations of getting a result. So we've seen them beat a few decent teams, but also, I mean, they got pumped by West Brom, I think, in August.
7-1
it was. So just a very wildly inconsistent team.
Gubbed, as they say up north, yeah.
But I think they play one up front, which is why I'm just saying a little bit before that I'd like to see, obviously, we assume if they go with one up front that we'll go back to the 4-1-4-1 formation. So for me, I'd like to see Phillips move back into that midfield and have Halm
very
back
much
there
so.
Alongside Pontus.
That, yeah.
So that'd be the one, obviously, enforced change. Dilemmas are posed up, aren't they? Because it's a home game. Leeds going to see a lot of the ball. So is it time to chuck Jack Clark in at the start? I still don't. My gut feeling is, or just from what I've sort of read from Bielsa so far, and all these sort of chess moves this season, I just still feel that Alioski might get a start.
The only reason I doubt that is because the way Bielsa was speaking on Saturday was as if to say, well, no, he was quite...
He was pretty diplomatic about it,
wasn't he? He said, I still rate him as highly as I did, but he seemed to be saying he needs a rest.
But maybe it'll be Harrison then, instead it might not see Clark. I don't know what his mind's thinking.
I can see the argument against starting Clark in terms of his fitness and his ability to cope with the full 90 minutes, but I do think from what we've seen in the past week that decision is there to be made. And I think, again, if Alioski is starting, he needs a very, very big game. I think Harrison, if as you were suggesting about Izzy Brown, if Izzy Brown is able to play on the left, if Clark comes to the fore, Harrison has got to start playing well if he's going to have a look in the second half of the season, because as I said earlier, nobody is going to push in front of Hernandez while he's fit and playing like this.
He's almost getting to a Baker situation, isn't he?
Very much so. Yeah. But again, through his own performances, I feel, I don't think there's been enough there to convince you that he should be playing. And I don't know, at home to QPR after a couple of good outings, maybe this is the time to give Clark a go. But it has to be said that Bielsa seems to know what he's doing with these kids. He seems to pick his moments well and to get them in at the right moments. So we will see.
It's a real shame there's no 23s game this week, because it might have given us a little bit of insight into where he thinks Izzy Brown is in terms of being included in a matchday squad once again. Because obviously, I think the Burnley game was supposed to be on Tuesday, but it's got moved to next week. So, because if he'd have played 45 minutes, it may be that he would have been included on the bench at the weekend. But anyway, be interesting to see if Brown sort of starts to appear on the bench in the next few weeks.
You would have thought so.
Yeah, absolutely. Because maybe that's another option. You start with Clark, replace him at half time with Brown on Saturday. But you don't. Obviously, we just don't know what his thinking is at this stage.
Never second guess him. That's what we've learnt, isn't it? Never second guess him. Well, my thanks to Joe and thanks to everybody for listening. As I say, sorry again for our no show last week. We will endeavour not to do that again. Although, possibly over the Christmas week, we might excuse ourselves, depending on...
I don't think we'll be hearing Santa hats, will we?
Where we are. Well, you never know. I mean, this room needs some Santa hats. It needs something.
It's a Christmas tree.
It's still got that feel with the big green curtain of the kind of Al-Qaeda den in the middle of Afghanistan. But we make the best of it. And if we can get some tinsel and some lights, I think now's the time. But thanks to everybody for listening. We'll definitely be back next week and enjoy the game at the weekend. Thank you.